given me a son. When Bilhah and Jacob had a second son, Rachel said, I've struggled hard with my sister, and I've won. So she named the boy Naphtali. When Leah realized she could not have any more children, she let Jacob marry her servant, Zilpah, and they had a son. I'm really lucky, Leah said, and she named the boy Gad. When they had another son, Leah exclaimed, I'm happy now, and all the women will say how happy I am. So she named him Asher. Love Flowers. During the time of the wheat harvest, Reuben found some love flowers and took them to his mother, Leah. Rachel asked Leah for some of them, but Leah said, It's bad enough that you stole my husband. Now you want my son's love flowers, too. All right, Rachel answered. Let me have the flowers, and you can sleep with Jacob tonight. That evening, when Jacob came in from the fields, Leah told him, You're sleeping with me tonight. I hired you with my son's love flowers. They slept together that night, and God answered Leah's prayers by giving her a fifth son. Leah shouted, God has rewarded me for letting Jacob marry my servant. And she named the boy Issachar. When Leah had another son, she exclaimed, God has given me a wonderful gift, and my husband will praise me for giving him six sons. So she named the boy Zebulun. Later, Leah had a daughter and named her Dinah. Finally, God remembered Rachel. He answered her prayer by giving her a son. God has taken away my disgrace, she said. I'll name the boy Joseph, and I'll pray that the Lord will give me another son. Jacob and Laban. After Joseph was born, Jacob said to Laban, Release me from our agreement. And let me return to my own country. You know how hard I've worked for you, so let me take my wives and children and leave. But Laban told him, If you really are my friend, stay on, and I'll pay whatever you ask. I'm sure the Lord has blessed me because of you. Jacob answered, You've seen how hard I've worked for you, and you know how your flocks and herds have grown under my care. You didn't have much before I came, but the Lord has blessed everything I have ever done for you. Now it's time for me to start looking out for my own family. How much do you want me to pay you? Laban asked. Then Jacob told him, I don't want you to pay me anything. Just do one thing, and I'll take care of your sheep and goats. Let me go through your flocks and herds, and take the sheep and goats that are either spotted or speckled, and the black lambs. That's all you need to give me. In the future, you can easily find out if I've been honest. Just look and see if my animals are either spotted or speckled, or if the lambs are black. If they aren't, they've been stolen from you. I agree to that, was Laban's response. Before the end of the day, Laban had separated his spotted and speckled animals and the black lambs from the others and had put his sons in charge of them. Then Laban made Jacob keep the rest of the sheep and goats at a distance of 3 days' journey. Jacob cut branches from some poplar trees and from some almond and evergreen trees. He peeled off part of the bark and made the branches look spotted and speckled. Then he put the branches where the sheep and goats would see them while they were drinking from the water trough. The goats mated there in front of the branches, and their young were spotted and speckled. Some of the sheep that Jacob was keeping for Laban were already spotted, and when the others were ready to mate, he made sure that they faced in the direction of the spotted and black ones. In this way, Jacob built up a flock of sheep for himself and did not put them with the other sheep. When the stronger sheep were mating near the drinking place, Jacob made sure that the spotted branches were there. But he would not put out the branches when the weaker animals were mating. So Jacob got all of the healthy animals, and Laban got what was left. Jacob soon became rich and successful. He owned many sheep, goats, camels, and donkeys, as well as a lot of slaves. Jacob runs from Laban. Chapter 31. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were complaining, "Jacob is now a rich man, and he got everything he owns from our father." Jacob also noticed that Laban was not as friendly as he had been before. One day, the Lord said, "Jacob, go back to your relatives in the land of your ancestors, and I will bless you." Jacob sent for Rachel and Leah to meet him in the field where he kept his sheep, and he told them, "Your father isn't as friendly with me as he used to be, but the God my ancestors worshipped has been on my side. You know that I have worked hard for your father, and that he keeps cheating me by changing my wages time after time. But God has protected me. When your father said the speckled sheep would be my wages, all of them were speckled. And when he said the spotted ones would be mine, all of them were spotted. That's how God has taken sheep and goats from your father and given them to me. Once, when the flocks were mating, I dreamed that all the rams were either spotted or speckled. Then God's angel called me by name. I answered, and he said, 'Notice that all the rams are either spotted or speckled. I know everything Laban is doing to you, and I am the God you worshipped at Bethel, when you poured olive oil on a rock and made a promise to me. Leave here right away and return to the land where you were born.'" Rachel and Leah said to Jacob, "There's nothing left for us to inherit from our father. He treats us like foreigners and has even cheated us out of the bride price that should have been ours. Now do whatever God tells you to do. Even the property God took from our father and gave to you really belongs to us and our children." Then Jacob, his wives, and his children got on camels and left for the home of his father Isaac in Canaan. Jacob took all of the flocks, herds, and other property that he had gotten in northern Syria. Before Rachel left, she stole the household idols while Laban was out shearing his sheep. Jacob tricked Laban the Aramean by not saying that he intended to leave. When Jacob crossed the Euphrates River and headed for the hill country of Gilead, he took with him everything he owned. Laban catches up with Jacob. 3 days later, Laban found out that Jacob had gone. So he took some of his relatives along and chased after Jacob for 7 days before catching up with him in the hill country of Gilead. But God appeared to Laban in a dream that night and warned, "Don't say a word to Jacob. Don't make a threat or a promise." Jacob had set up camp in the hill country of Gilead when Laban and his relatives came and set up camp in another part of the hill country. Laban went to Jacob and said, "Look what you've done. You've tricked me and run off with my daughters like a kidnapper. Why did you sneak away without telling me? I would have given you a going-away party with singing and with music on tambourines and harps. You didn't even give me a chance to kiss my own grandchildren and daughters goodbye. That was really foolish. I could easily hurt you, but the God your father worshipped has warned me not to make any threats or promises. I can understand why you were eager to return to your father, but why did you have to steal my idols?" Jacob answered, I left secretly because I was afraid you would take your daughters from me by force. If you find that any one of us has taken your idols, I'll have that person killed. Let your relatives be witnesses. Show me what belongs to you, and you can take it back." Jacob did not realize that Rachel had stolen the household idols. Laban searched the tents of Jacob, Leah, and the two servant women, but did not find the idols. Then he started for Rachel's tent. She had already hidden them in the cushion she used as a saddle and was sitting on it. Laban searched everywhere and did not find them. Rachel said, "Father, please don't be angry with me for not getting up. I am having my period." Laban kept on searching, but still did not find the idols. Jacob became very angry and said to Laban, "What have I done wrong? Have I committed some crime? Is that why you hunted me down? After searching through everything I have, did you find anything of yours? If so, put it here, where your relatives and mine can see it. Then we can decide what to do. In all the 20 years that I've worked for you, not one of your sheep or goats has had a miscarriage, and I've never eaten even one of your rams. If a wild animal killed one of your sheep or goats, I paid for it myself. In fact, you demanded the full price, whether the animal was killed during the day or at night. I sweated every day, and I couldn't sleep at night because of the cold. I had to work 14 of these 20 long years to earn your 2 daughters, and another 6 years to buy your sheep and goats. During that time, you kept changing my wages. If the fearsome God worshipped by Abraham and my father Isaac had not been on my side, you would have sent me away without a thing. But God saw my hard work, and he knew the trouble I was in, so he helped me. Then, last night, he told you how wrong you were." Jacob and Laban make an agreement. Laban said to Jacob, "Leah and Rachel are my daughters, and their children belong to me. All these sheep you are taking are really mine, too. In fact, everything you have belongs to me. But there is nothing I can do to keep my daughters and their children. So I am ready to make an agreement with you, and we will pile up some large rocks here to remind us of the agreement." After Jacob had set up a large rock, he told his men to get some more rocks and pile them up next to it. Then Jacob and Laban ate a meal together beside the rocks. Laban named the pile of rocks Jegar Sahadutha, but Jacob named it Galeed. Laban said to Jacob, "This pile of rocks will remind us of our agreement." That's why the place was named Galeed. Laban also said, "This pile of rocks means that the Lord will watch us both while we are apart from each other." So the place was also named Mizpah. Then Laban said, "If you mistreat my daughters or marry other women, I may not know about it, but remember, God is watching us. Both this pile of rocks and this large rock have been set up between us as a reminder. I must never go beyond them to attack you, and you must never go beyond them to attack me. My father, Nahor, your grandfather, Abraham, and their ancestors all worship the same God, and he will make sure that we each keep the agreement." Then Jacob made a promise in the name of the fearsome God his father Isaac had worshipped. Jacob killed an animal and offered it as a sacrifice there on the mountain, and he invited his men to eat with him. After the meal, they spent the night on the mountain. Early the next morning, Laban kissed his daughters and his grandchildren goodbye. Then he left to go back home. Jacob gets ready to meet Esau. Chapter 32. As Jacob was on his way back home, some of God's angels came and met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he named the place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers on ahead to Esau, who lived in the land of Seir, also known as Edom. Jacob told them to say to Esau, "Master, I am your servant. I have lived with Laban all this time, and now I own cattle, donkeys, and sheep, as well as many slaves. Master, I am sending these messengers in the hope that you will be kind to me." When the messengers returned, they told Jacob, "We went to your brother Esau, and now he is heading this way with 400 men." Jacob was so frightened that he divided his people, sheep, cattle, and camels, into two groups. He thought, "If Esau attacks one group, perhaps the other can escape." Then Jacob prayed, "You, Lord, are the God who was worshipped by my grandfather Abraham and by my father Isaac. You told me to return home to my family, and you promised to be with me and make me successful. I don't deserve all the good things you have done for me, your servant. When I first crossed the Jordan, I had only my walking stick, but now I have two large groups of people and animals. Please rescue me from my brother. I am afraid he will come and attack not only me, but my wives and children as well. But you have promised that I would be a success, and that someday it will be as hard to count my descendants as it is to count the stars in the sky." After Jacob had spent the night there, he chose some animals as gifts for Esau. 200 female goats and 20 males, 200 female sheep and 20 males, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys and 10 males. Jacob put servants in charge of each herd and told them, "Go ahead of me and keep a space between each herd." Then he said to the servant in charge of the first herd, "When Esau meets you, he will ask whose servant you are. He will want to know where you are going and who owns those animals in front of you. So tell him, 'They belong to your servant Jacob, who is coming this way. He is sending them as a gift to his master Esau.'" Jacob also told the men in charge of the second and third herds, and those who followed, to say the same thing when they met Esau. And Jacob told them to be sure to say that he was right behind them. Jacob hoped the gifts would make Esau friendly, so Esau would be glad to see him when they met. Jacob's men took the gifts on ahead of him, but he spent the night in camp. Jacob's name is changed to Israel. Jacob got up in the middle of the night and took his wives, his 11 children, and everything he owned across to the other side of the Jabbok River for safety. Afterwards, Jacob went back and spent the rest of the night alone. A man came and fought with Jacob until just before daybreak. When the man saw that he could not win, he struck Jacob on the hip and threw it out of joint. They kept on wrestling until the man said, "Let go of me. It's almost daylight." "You can't go until you bless me," Jacob replied. Then the man asked, "What is your name?"
"Jacob,"
he answered. The man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob. You have wrestled with God and with men, and you have won. That's why your name will be Israel." Jacob said, "Now tell me your name."
"Don't you know who I am?"
he asked. And he blessed Jacob. Jacob said, "I have seen God face to face, and I am still alive." So he named the place Peniel. The sun was coming up as Jacob was leaving Peniel. He was limping because he had been struck on the hip, and the muscle on his hip joint had been injured. That's why, even today, the people of Israel don't eat the hip muscle of any animal. Jacob meets Esau. Chapter 33. Later that day, Jacob met Esau coming with his 400 men. So Jacob had his children walk with their mothers. The two servant women, Zilpah and Bilhah, together with their children, went first, followed by Leah and her children, then by Rachel and Joseph. Jacob himself walked in front of them all, bowing to the ground 7 times as he came near his brother. But Esau ran toward Jacob and hugged and kissed him. Then the two brothers started crying. When Esau noticed the women and children, he asked, "Whose children are these?" Jacob answered, "These are the ones the Lord has been kind enough to give to me, your servant." Then the two servant women and their children came and bowed down to Esau. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Finally, Joseph and Rachel also came and bowed down. Esau asked Jacob, "What did you mean by these herds I met along the road?" "Master," Jacob answered, "I sent them so that you would be friendly to me." "But, brother, I already have plenty," Esau replied. "Keep them for yourself." "No," Jacob said. "Please accept these gifts as a sign of your friendship for me. When you welcomed me and I saw your face, it was like seeing the face of God. Please accept these gifts I brought to you. God has been good to me, and I have everything I need." Jacob kept insisting until Esau accepted the gifts. "Let's get ready to travel," Esau said. "I'll go along with you." But Jacob answered, "Master, you know traveling is hard on children, and I have to look after the sheep and goats that are nursing their young. If my animals travel too much in one day, they will all die. Why don't you go on ahead, and let me travel along slowly with the children, the herds, and the flocks? We can meet again in the country of Edom." Esau replied, "Let me leave some of my men with you." "You don't have to do that," Jacob answered. "I am happy simply knowing that you are friendly to me." So Esau left for Edom. But Jacob went to Succoth, where he built a house for himself and set up shelters for his animals. That's why the place is called Succoth. Jacob arrives at Shechem. After leaving northern Syria, Jacob arrived safely at Shechem in Canaan and set up camp outside the city. The land where he camped was owned by the descendants of Hamor, the father of Shechem. So Jacob paid them 100 pieces of silver for the property. Then he set up his tents and built an altar there to honor the God of Israel. Dinah is raped. Chapter 34. Dinah, the daughter of Jacob and Leah, went to visit some of the women who lived there. She was seen by Hamor's son Shechem, the leader of the Hivites, and he grabbed her and raped her. But Shechem was attracted to Dinah, so he told her how much he loved her. He even asked his father to get her for his wife. Meanwhile, Jacob heard what had happened, but his sons were out in the fields with the cattle, so he did not do anything at the time. Hamor arrived at Jacob's home just as Jacob's sons were coming in from work. When they learned that their sister had been raped, they became furiously angry. Nothing is more disgraceful than rape, and it should not be tolerated in Israel. Hamor said to Jacob and his sons, "My son Shechem really loves Dinah. Please let him marry her. Why don't you start letting your families marry into our families, and ours marry into yours? You can share this land with us. Move freely about until you find the property you want. Then buy it and settle down here. Shechem added, Do this favor for me, and I'll give whatever you want. Ask anything, no matter how expensive. I'll do anything, just let me marry Dinah. Jacob's sons wanted to get even with Shechem and his father because of what had happened to their sister. So they tricked them by saying, You're not circumcised. It would be a disgrace for us to let you marry Dinah now. But we will let you marry her if you and the other men in your tribe get circumcised. Then your families can marry into ours, and ours can marry into yours, and we can live together like one nation. But if you don't agree to get circumcised, we'll take Dinah and leave this place. Hamor and Shechem liked what was said. Shechem was the most respected person in his family, and he was so in love with Dinah that he hurried off to get everything done. The two men met with the other leaders of their city and told them, These people really are friendly. Why not let them move freely about until they find the property they want? There's enough land here for them and for us. Then our families can marry into theirs, and theirs can marry into ours. We have to do only one thing before they will agree to stay here and become one nation with us. Our men will have to be circumcised like their men. Just think, we'll get their property, as well as their flocks and herds. All we have to do is to agree, and they will live here with us. Every grown man followed this advice and got circumcised. Dinah's brothers take revenge. 3 days later, the men who had been circumcised were still weak from pain. So Simeon and Levi, two of Dinah's brothers, attacked with their swords and killed every man in town, including Hamor and Shechem. Then they took Dinah and left. Jacob's other sons came and took everything they wanted. All this was done because of the horrible thing that had happened to their sister. They took sheep, goats, donkeys, and everything else that was in the town or the fields. After taking everything of value from the houses, they dragged away the wives and children of their victims. Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, Look what you've done. Now I'm in real trouble with the Canaanites and Perizzites who live around here. There aren't many of us, and if they attack, they'll kill everyone in my household. They answered, Was it right to let our own sister be treated that way? Jacob returns to Bethel. Chapter 35. God told Jacob, Return to Bethel, where I appeared to you when you were running from your brother Esau. Make your home there and build an altar for me. Jacob said to his family and to everyone else who was traveling with him, Get rid of your foreign gods. Then make yourselves acceptable to worship God and put on clean clothes. Afterwards, we'll go to Bethel. I will build an altar there for God, who answered my prayers when I was in trouble and who has always been at my side. So everyone gave Jacob their idols and their earrings, and he buried them under the oak tree near Shechem. While Jacob and his family were traveling through Canaan, God terrified the people in the towns so much that no one dared bother them. Finally, they reached Bethel, also known as Luz. Jacob built an altar there and called it God of Bethel, because that was the place where God had appeared to him when he was running from Esau. While they were there, Rebekah's personal servant, Deborah, died. They buried her under an oak tree and called it Weeping Oak. God blesses Jacob at Bethel. After Jacob came back to the land of Canaan, God appeared to him again. This time he gave Jacob a new name and blessed him by saying, "I am God all-powerful, and from now on your name will be Israel instead of Jacob. You will have many children. Your descendants will become nations, and some of the men in your family will even be kings. I will give you the land that I promised Abraham and Isaac, and it will belong to your family forever." After God had gone, Jacob set up a large rock so that he would remember what had happened there. Then he poured wine and olive oil on the rock to show that it was dedicated to God, and he named the place Bethel. Benjamin is born. Jacob and his family had left Bethel and were still a long way from Ephrath when the time came for Rachel's baby to be born. She was having a rough time, but the woman who was helping her said, "Don't worry, it's a boy." Rachel was at the point of death, and right before dying, she said, "I'll name him Benoni." But Jacob called him Benjamin. Rachel was buried beside the road to Ephrath, which is also called Bethlehem. Jacob set up a tombstone over her grave, and it is still there. Jacob, also known as Israel, traveled to the south of Eder Tower, where he set up camp. During their time there, Jacob's oldest son, Reuben, slept with Bilhah, who was one of Jacob's other wives, and Jacob found out about it. Jacob's 12 sons. Jacob had 12 sons while living in northern Syria. His firstborn, Reuben, was the son of Leah, who later gave birth to Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. Leah's servant Zilpah had 2 sons, Gad and Asher. Jacob and his wife Rachel had Joseph and Benjamin. Rachel's servant woman Bilhah had 2 more sons, Dan and Naphtali. Isaac dies. Jacob went to his father Isaac at Hebron, also called Mamre or Kiriath Arba, where Isaac's father Abraham had lived as a foreigner. Isaac died at the ripe old age of 180. Then his sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. Esau's family. Chapter 36. Esau, also known as Edom, had many descendants. He married 3 Canaanite women. The first was Ada, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. The second was Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah and the granddaughter of Zibeon the Hivite. The third was Basemath, who was Ishmael's daughter and Nebaioth's sister. Esau and his 3 wives had 5 sons while in Canaan. Ada's son was Eliphaz. Basemath's son was Reuel. Aholibamah's 3 sons were Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. Esau took his children and wives, his relatives and servants, his animals and possessions he had gotten while in Canaan, and moved far from Jacob. He did this because the land was too crowded and could not support him and his brother with their flocks and herds. That's why Esau made his home in the hill country of Seir. Esau lived in the hill country of Seir and was the ancestor of the Edomites. Esau had 3 wives, Ada, Basemath, and Aholibamah. Here is a list of his descendants. Esau and Ada had a son named Eliphaz, whose sons were Teman, Omer, Zepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Timna was the other wife of Esau's son Eliphaz, and she had a son named Amalek. Esau and Basemath had a son named Reuel, whose sons were Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. Esau and Aholibamah had three sons, Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. Chiefs and Leaders in Edom. Esau and Adah's oldest son was Eliphaz, and the clans that descended from him were Teman, Omer, Zepho, Kenaz, Korah, Gatam, and Amalek. These and Esau's other descendants lived in the land of Edom. The clans that descended from Esau and Basemath's son Reuel were Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. The clans that descended from Esau and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, were Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. All of these clans descended from Esau, who was known as Edom. Seir was from the Horite tribe that had lived in Edom before the time of Esau. The clans that had descended from him were Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anah, Dishan, Ezer, and Dishan. Lotan's sons were Hori and Heman. His sister was Timnah. Shobal's sons were Alvan, Manahath, Ebal, Shepho, and Onam. Zibeon's sons were Aiah and Anah, the same Anah who found an oasis in the desert while taking the donkeys of his father out to pasture. Anah's children were Dishan and Aholibamah. Dishan's sons were Hemdan, Eshban, Ithran, and Kiran. Ezer's sons were Bilhan, Zeavan, and Achan. Dishan's sons were Uz and Aaron. The clans of the Horites were Lotan, Shobal, Zibeon, Anah, Dishan, Ezer, and Dishan, and they lived in the land of Seir. Before there were kings in Israel, the following kings ruled Edom one after another. Bela, son of Beor, from Dinaba. Jobab, son of Zerah, from Bozra. Husham, from the land of Teman. Hadad, son of Bedad, from Avith. Bedad had defeated the Midianites in Moab. Samla, from Masrekah. Shale, from the city of Rehoboth, on the Euphrates River. Baal-Hanan, son of Achbor. Hadar, from the city of Peu. His wife, Mehetabel, was the daughter of Matred and the granddaughter of Mezahab. The clans that descended from Esau took their names from their families and the places where they lived. They are Timnah, Alva, Jetheth, Aholibamah, Elah, Pinon, Kenaz, Teman, Mibzar, Magdiel, and Iram. These clans descended from Esau, who was known as Edom, the father of the Edomites. They took their names from the places where they settled.
Joseph and his brothers. Chapter 37. Jacob lived in the land of Canaan, where his father Isaac had lived, and this is the story of his family. When Jacob's son Joseph was 17 years old, he took care of the sheep with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. But he was always telling his father all sorts of bad things about his brothers. Jacob loved Joseph more than he did any of his other sons, because Joseph was born after Jacob was very old. Jacob had given Joseph a fancy coat to show that he was his favorite son, and so Joseph's brothers hated him and would not be friendly to him. One day, Joseph told his brothers what he had dreamed, and they hated him even more. Joseph said, "Let me tell you about my dream. We were out in the field, tying up bundles of wheat. Suddenly, my bundle stood up, and your bundles gathered around and bowed down to it." His brothers asked, "Do you really think you are going to be king and rule over us?" Now they hated Joseph more than ever, because of what he had said about his dream. Joseph later had another dream, and he told his brothers, "Listen to what else I dreamed. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowed down to me." When he told his father about this dream, his father became angry and said, "What's that supposed to mean? Are your mother and I and your brothers all going to come and bow down in front of you?" Joseph's brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept wondering about the dream. Joseph is sold and taken to Egypt. One day, when Joseph's brothers had taken the sheep to a pasture near Shechem, his father Jacob said to him, "I want you to go to your brothers, there with the sheep, near Shechem."
"Yes, sir," Joseph answered.
His father said, "Go and find out how your brothers and the sheep are doing, then come back and let me know." So he sent him from Hebron Valley. Joseph was near Shechem and wandering through the fields when a man asked, "What are you looking for?" Joseph answered, "I'm looking for my brothers who are watching the sheep. Can you tell me where they are?" "They're not here anymore," the man replied. "I overheard them say they were going to Dothan." Joseph left and found his brothers in Dothan. But before he got there, they saw him coming and made plans to kill him. They said to one another, "Look, here comes the hero of those dreams. Let's kill him and throw him into a pit and say that some wild animal ate him. Then we'll see what happens to those dreams." Reuben heard this and tried to protect Joseph from them. "Let's not kill him," he said. "Don't murder him or even harm him. Just throw him into a dry well out here in the desert." Reuben planned to rescue Joseph later and take him back to his father. When Joseph came to his brothers, they pulled off his fancy coat and threw him into a dry well. As Joseph's brothers sat down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with all kinds of spices that they were taking to Egypt. So Judah said, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and hide his body? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not harm him. After all, he is our brother." And the others agreed. When the Midianite merchants came by, Joseph's brothers took him out of the well, and for 20 pieces of silver, they sold him to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the well and did not find Joseph there, he tore his clothes in sorrow. Then he went back to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone. What am I going to do?" Joseph's brothers killed a goat and dipped Joseph's fancy coat in its blood. After this, they took the coat to their father and said, "We found this. Look at it carefully and see if it belongs to your son." Jacob knew it was Joseph's coat and said, "It's my son's coat. Joseph has been torn to pieces and eaten by some wild animal." Jacob mourned for Joseph a long time, and to show his sorrow, he tore his clothes and wore sackcloth. All of Jacob's children came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I will go to my grave mourning for my son." So Jacob kept on grieving. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold Joseph in Egypt to a man named Potiphar, who was the king's official in charge of the palace guard. Judah and Tamar. Chapter 38. About that time, Judah left his brothers in the hill country and went to live near his friend Hira in the town of Adullam. While there, he met the daughter of Shua, a Canaanite man. Judah married her, and they had three sons. He named the first one Ur. She named the next one Onan. The third one was born when Judah was in Kezib, and she named him Shelah. Later, Judah chose Tamar as a wife for Ur, his oldest son. But Ur was very evil, and the Lord took his life. So Judah told Onan, "It's your duty to marry Tamar and have a child for your brother." Onan knew the child would not be his, and when he had sex with Tamar, he made sure that she would not get pregnant. The Lord wasn't pleased with Onan, and took his life too. Judah did not want the same thing to happen to his son Shelah, and he told Tamar, "Go home to your father and live there as a widow until my son Shelah is grown." So Tamar went to live with her father. Some years later, Judah's wife died, and he mourned for her. He then went with his friend Hira to the town of Timnah, where his sheep were being sheared. Tamar found out that her father-in-law Judah was going to Timnah to shear his sheep. She also realized that Shelah was now a grown man, but she had not been allowed to marry him. So she decided to dress in something other than her widow's clothes and to cover her face with a veil. After this, she sat outside the town of Enaim on the road to Timnah. When Judah came along, he did not recognize her because of the veil. He thought she was a prostitute and asked her to sleep with him. She asked, "What will you give me if I do?" "One of my young goats," he answered. "What will you give me to keep until you send the goat?" she asked. "What do you want?" he asked in return. "The ring on that cord around your neck," was her reply. "I also want the special walking stick you have with you." He gave them to her, they slept together, and she became pregnant. After returning home, Tamar took off the veil and dressed in her widow's clothes again. Judah had his friend Hira take a goat to the woman so he could get back the ring and walking stick, but she wasn't there. Hira asked the people of Enaim, "Where is the prostitute who sat along the road outside your town?" "There's never been one here," they answered. Hira went back and told Judah, "I couldn't find the woman, and the people of Enaim said no prostitute had ever been there." "If you couldn't find her, we'll just let her keep the things I gave her," Judah answered. "And we'd better forget about the goat, or else we'll look like fools." About 3 months later, someone told Judah, "Your daughter-in-law Tamar has behaved like a prostitute, and now she's pregnant." "Drag her out of town and burn her to death," Judah shouted. As Tamar was being dragged off, she sent someone to tell her father-in-law, "The man who gave me this ring, this cord, and this walking stick is the one who got me pregnant." "Those are mine," Judah admitted. "She's a better person than I am, because I broke my promise to let her marry my son Shelah." After this, Judah never slept with her again. Tamar later gave birth to twins. But before either of them was born, one of them stuck a hand out of her womb. The woman who was helping tied a red thread around the baby's hand and explained, "This one came out first." Right away his hand went back in, and the other child was born first. The woman then said, "What an opening you've made for yourself." So they named the baby Perez. When the brother with the red thread came out, they named him Zerah. Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Chapter 39. The Ishmaelites took Joseph to Egypt and sold him to Potiphar, the king's official in charge of the palace guard. So Joseph lived in the home of Potiphar, his Egyptian owner. Soon Potiphar realized that the Lord was helping Joseph to be successful in whatever he did. Potiphar liked Joseph and made him his personal assistant, putting him in charge of his house and all of his property. Because of Joseph, the Lord began to bless Potiphar's family and fields. Potiphar left everything up to Joseph, and with Joseph there, the only decision he had to make was what he wanted to eat. Joseph was well-built and handsome, and Potiphar's wife soon noticed him. She asked him to make love to her, but he refused and said, "My master isn't worried about anything in his house, because he has placed me in charge of everything he owns. No one in my master's house is more important than I am. The only thing he hasn't given me is you, and that's because you are his wife. I won't sin against God by doing such a terrible thing as this." She kept begging Joseph day after day, but he refused to do what she wanted or even to go near her. One day, Joseph went to Potiphar's house to do his work, and none of the other servants were there. Potiphar's wife grabbed hold of his coat and said, "Make love to me." Joseph ran out of the house, leaving her hanging onto his coat. When this happened, she called in her servants and said, "Look, this Hebrew has come just to make fools of us. He tried to rape me, but I screamed for help. And when he heard me scream, he ran out of the house, leaving his coat with me." Potiphar's wife kept Joseph's coat until her husband came home. Then she said, "That Hebrew slave of yours tried to rape me, but when I screamed for help, he left his coat and ran out of the house." Potiphar became very angry and threw Joseph in the same prison where the king's prisoners were kept. While Joseph was in prison, the Lord helped him and was good to him. He even made the jailer like Joseph so much that he put him in charge of the other prisoners and of everything that was done in the jail. The jailer did not worry about anything because the Lord was with Joseph and made him successful in all that he did. Joseph tells the meaning of the prisoner's dreams. Chapter 40. While Joseph was in prison, both the king's personal servant and his chief cook made the king angry, so he had them thrown in the same prison with Joseph. They spent a long time in prison, and Potiphar, the official in charge of the palace guard, made Joseph their servant. One night, each of the two men had a dream, but their dreams had different meanings. The next morning, when Joseph went to see the men, he could tell they were upset, and he asked, "Why are you so worried today?" "We each had a dream last night," they answered, "and there is no one to tell us what they mean." Joseph replied, "Doesn't God know the meaning of dreams? Now tell me what you dreamed." The king's personal servant told Joseph, "In my dream, I saw a vine with three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed and its grapes became ripe. I held the king's cup and squeezed the grapes into it. Then I gave the cup to the king." Joseph said, "This is the meaning of your dream. The three branches stand for 3 days, and in 3 days the king will pardon you. He will make you his personal servant again, and you will serve him his wine, just as you used to do. But when these good things happen, please don't forget to tell the king about me, so I can get out of this place. I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and here in Egypt I haven't done anything to deserve being thrown in jail." When the chief cook saw that Joseph had given a good meaning to the dream, he told Joseph, "I also had a dream. In it, I was carrying 3 bread baskets stacked on top of my head. The top basket was full of all kinds of baked things for the king, but the birds were eating them." Joseph said, "This is the meaning of your dream. The 3 baskets are 3 days, and in 3 days the king will cut off your head. He will hang your body on a pole, and birds will come and peck at it. 3 days later, while the king was celebrating his birthday with a dinner for his officials, he sent for his personal servant and the chief cook. He put the personal servant back to his old job and had the cook put to death. Everything happened just as Joseph had said it would, but the king's personal servant completely forgot about Joseph. Joseph interprets the king's dreams. Chapter 41. 2 years later, the king of Egypt dreamed he was standing beside the Nile River. Suddenly, 7 fat, healthy cows came up from the river and started eating grass along the bank. Then 7 ugly, skinny cows came up out of the river and ate the fat, healthy cows. When this happened, the king woke up. The king went back to sleep and had another dream. This time, 7 full heads of grain were growing on a single stalk. Later, 7 other heads of grain appeared, but they were thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed the 7 full heads. Again the king woke up, and it had only been a dream. The next morning the king was upset, so he called in his magicians and wise men and told them what he had dreamed. None of them could tell him what the dreams meant. The king's personal servant said,
"Now I remember what I was supposed to do. When you were angry with me and your chief cook, you threw us both in jail in the house of the captain of the guard. One night, we both had dreams, and each dream had a different meaning. A young Hebrew, who was a servant of the captain of the guard, was there with us at the time. When we told him our dreams, he explained what each of them meant, and everything happened just as he said it would. I got my job back, and the cook was put to death."
The king sent for Joseph, who was quickly brought out of jail. He shaved, changed his clothes, and went to the king. The king said to him,
"I had a dream, yet no one can explain what it means. I'm told that you can interpret dreams."
"Your Majesty," Joseph answered, "I can't do it myself, but God can give a good meaning to your dreams."
The king told Joseph,
"I dreamed I was standing on the bank of the Nile River. I saw 7 fat, healthy cows come up out of the river, and they began feeding on the grass. Next, 7 skinny, bony cows came up out of the river. I have never seen such terrible-looking cows anywhere in Egypt. The skinny cows ate the fat ones, but you couldn't tell it because these skinny cows were just as skinny as they were before. Right away I woke up. I also dreamed that I saw 7 heads of grain growing on one stalk. The heads were full and ripe. Then 7 other heads of grain came up. They were thin and scorched by a wind from the desert. These heads of grain swallowed the full ones. I told my dreams to the magicians, but none of them could tell me the meaning of the dreams." Joseph replied,
"Your Majesty, both of your dreams mean the same thing, and in them God has shown what he is going to do. The 7 good cows stand for 7 years, and so do the 7 good heads of grain. The 7 skinny, ugly cows that came up later also stand for 7 years, as do the 7 bad heads of grain that were scorched by the east wind. The dreams mean there will be 7 years when there won't be enough grain. It is just as I said. God has shown what he intends to do. For 7 years, Egypt will have more than enough grain, but that will be followed by 7 years when there won't be enough. The good years of plenty will be forgotten, and everywhere in Egypt, people will be starving. The famine will be so bad that no one will remember that once there had been plenty. God has given you 2 dreams to let you know that he has definitely decided to do this, and that he will do it soon. Your Majesty, you should find someone who is wise and will know what to do,
so that you can put him in charge of all Egypt. Then appoint some other officials to collect one-fifth of every crop harvested in Egypt during the 7 years when there is plenty. Give them the power to collect the grain during those good years and to store it in your cities. It can be stored until it is needed during the 7 years when there won't be enough grain in Egypt. This will keep the country from being destroyed because of the lack of food. Joseph is made governor over Egypt. The king and his officials liked this plan. So the king said to them, "No one could possibly handle this better than Joseph, since the Spirit of God is with him." The king told Joseph, "God is the one who has shown you these things. No one else is as wise as you are, or knows as much as you do. I'm putting you in charge of my palace, and everybody will have to obey you. No one will be over you except me. You are now governor of all Egypt." Then the king took off his royal ring and put it on Joseph's finger. He gave him fine clothes to wear and placed a gold chain around his neck. He also let him ride in the chariot next to his own, and people shouted, "Make way for Joseph." So Joseph was governor of Egypt. The king told Joseph, "Although I'm king, no one in Egypt is to do anything without your permission." He gave Joseph the Egyptian name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he let him marry Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, a priest in the city of Heliopolis. Joseph traveled all over Egypt. Joseph was 30 when the king made him governor, and he went everywhere for the king. For 7 years, there were big harvests of grain. Joseph collected and stored up the extra grain in the cities of Egypt near the fields where it was harvested. In fact, there was so much grain that they stopped keeping record, because it was like counting the grains of sand along the beach. Joseph and his wife had 2 sons before the